Welcome back to another episode of Believe in FSU Basketball. This is your one and only Nick Andre, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in. Been a very big week for basketball, Florida State, both men and women's programs. Austin will be on momentarily to talk about the men's, but I'm here to kick it off. Talking about the women's team, who had a very eventful time in Greensboro during the ACC tournament. Unfortunately, did not advance to the championship contest as they lost to NC State in the semifinals. But before we get into that, we got to talk about some awards that took place. First and foremost, congrats to both Tania Latson and Michaela Timpson, who won first team all ACC. I've been saying all year long that Tania is one of the best scorers in college basketball. And I think this year was definitely an indication of that, especially considering how well she played in conference play. Started her first three games against Georgia Tech, against Wake Forest, and against NC State, having 30 points in each of those games, and just being able to continue to ride that momentum. She did have her games where she did struggle, and the fact that she didn't shoot the best, but at the end of the day, you know, she was definitely the X factor throughout the course of the season. You know, being able to just score in multiple ways, showing that driving ability, being able to score in the mid-range occasionally, knocking down three-point shots. So just being able to show the overall package was just incredible. And then we talk about KK Timpson and just her growth as a two-way player. You know, I've forever highlighted KK's ability to just be more of a valuable scorer. You know, being able to not only finish around the rim, but also being a great post player. You know, being able to play in single covers, being able to face up, knock down small mid-range jumpers, being able to make her way to the basket with a terrific footwork and timing. So KK has just been phenomenal all around, not even just offensively, but defensively, you know, just showing her growth there, an elite rim protector, the best shot blocker in the ACC, and it's not even close. And then on top of that, you know, just her ability to, you know, to step out as well. The defense is super versatile whenever KK is on the floor, just because of that versatility of being able to step out and guard smaller smaller offensive players on occasion. So congrats to Tania, congrats to KK, and also congrats to KK Timpson as well for winning for being a member of the ACC all-defensive team. Once again, you know, as I highlighted, you know, it's just another indication of just her greatness, you know, and just her impact, just her impact on the team as a whole. And then, of course, Tania Latson, one of the Ann Meyer Shooting Guards of the Year candidates alongside players like Paige Beckers and others. Once again, you know, Tania is getting highlighted for her play overall. And she's only a sophomore, so she's only going to get better as time goes on. So once again, congrats to those two on winning some awards this year. And we'll have to look forward to see what they do next season. Now let's dive into the ACC tournament. Florida State clinched the sixth seed. They have Wake Forest. Wake Forest ended up coming out of that matchup against Virginia, which was a really great come from behind victory. They had a really strong fourth quarter to be able to win that game. So now Florida State is placing another ACC tournament game against Wake Forest. Everybody knows what took place last year. Wake Forest ended up beating us. They had a really strong third quarter. I don't remember exactly how much they outscored Florida State by, but it was such a strong third quarter. And then they were able to prevail and win the rest of the game. So they knocked us out. So now we have revenge this year in 2024. And the difference between last year and this year is Tania Latson. Tania Latson didn't play at all last year as she dealt with the injury. Now she's healthy this year, and she was more motivated than ever to play in her first tournament game. And I'm sure the world was waiting to see what she was going to be able to do. So while Tania played a huge role in that first game, the biggest story of the night was KK Timpson. Once again, you know, I love when she has that ability to be in control of that offense. And I love the fact that Brooke makes it an effort to get her involved offensively early. And that's what we saw. You know, she was able to impose her will inside, be physical, you know, attack the glass. And that really carried over throughout the rest of the game. Florida State went up 20 at the break, 37-17. And the one thing that I was concerned about was how will this team come out of the locker room in the third quarter? Because I've highlighted this before, that this team can be a shaky third quarter team where they come out of the locker room and, you know, one sloppy play after another, and they somehow seemed to lose that discipline. But luckily, they were able to contain that even when Wake Forest was looking to come on a run. And then they were just able to get the job done. And the one thing that people have to highlight is, you know, that Tania Lassen, KK Thompson connection. And it's funny because even Tania said after the game, it's like Wade to Bosh. And that's a great representation right there, man. You know, just that connection, you know, with Tania being the guard and KK just always putting herself in position to catch the ball wherever it is, whether it's in a dunker spot, whether it's like, you know, right under the rim. Because anytime, whether it's not even just Tania, whenever Tania drives, whenever Sarah Pacchetti drives, or whenever Omario Gordon drives, you know, they automatically attract 2-3 defenders. So that's always going to leave KK Thompson wide open. So that's just like, that's high IQ from KK, just being able to understand those situations and just being available and just being ready to anticipate that pass. So KK Thompson was definitely the highlight of the first game. And then you move on to Syracuse. And I said in one of the episodes that I wanted to see Syracuse. They met a few months ago in New York. Florida State was up big. Daisha Fair took over, and Syracuse ended up winning on their home floor. So now it's time to get revenge. And Daisha Fair is just so dynamic as a player. And it's not even just her scoring. You know, it's her ability to move without the basketball. It's her ability to just be a playmaker and set other players up for success. She does literally everything on the floor that a point guard should be, or whatever she is, you know, whatever you want to call her. And that was one of the biggest things coming into this game. So I mentioned before, Sarah Pacchetti had the guard. Sarah Pacchetti is the best defender on the team, or at least the best perimeter defender on the team, excuse me. And I knew that Sarah was going to give her issues. And she definitely did that. Daisha Ferry got off to a really strong first quarter. I think she had like 9 in the first quarter or something like that. But then got off to a slow start in the second quarter, wasn't able to really find a rhythm. And while she wasn't really able to find a rhythm, which is in credit to Sarah Pacchetti, Florida State went on a run. Omario Gordon was huge in the first half. And one thing about Omario just understands when to step up offensively. And especially with Tania Lassen being in foul trouble throughout most of that game, and then she did end up fouling out later on in the game. It was Omario that they looked to, being able to knock down shots, being able to put pressure on the defense and attack the rim, being able to be a playmaker, just being able to do everything on the floor offensively that can help that team keep momentum. And that momentum just continued for Omario. And that's what I keep saying, man. She can be the smallest player on the floor, but she got the biggest heart, man, because she's never going to back down to any challenge. And she definitely stepped up to the plate, man. And then, so with Florida State being up big once again at halftime against Syracuse, third quarter kept their foot on the gas. Tania went crazy, like, you know, attacking the rim, finding driving lanes, you know, just being able to really impose her will on this game, because she was in foul trouble throughout most of the first half, so she wasn't really in position to attack. So once she had that green light in the second half, then that's when we saw the best version of herself. And with that being said, Florida State continued to ride on that momentum, and then they ended up winning the game by 13, man. So give credit to this team. They got to the first two rounds of the ACC tournament, which is crazy because they lost their first and only game last year. So huge improvement from what took place the year before. So now that leads us to Saturday's game against NC State. And the Syracuse game took place at 7:30 Eastern Friday night. So now they got to turn around and play Saturday afternoon at 2:30. So less than 24 hours in between games. So quick recovery, you know, quick adjustment, you know, film study, trying to figure out, you know, how to beat this team, because Florida State and NC State, they had a battle early in conference play where they went into overtime. Unfortunately, Florida State was not able to come on top. So a lot of that's in the back of their mind. And one thing I'd say about NC State leading up to that matchup was, you know, they definitely got through the that game against Duke on Friday. But I still feel like they didn't play the best basketball. They weren't really shooting the ball well. They weren't necessarily shooting free throws really well. So those were some biggest concerns. But also, you got to give credit, man. I mean, this is such a great defensive team. So, you know, they're always going to bring that effort. But the one advantage that they had over Florida State in this matchup was the fact that they could impose their will inside. And that was thanks to the River Baldwins, the Mimi Collins, who had a strong first half. And I think Florida State just wasn't necessarily prepared for that. And on top of that, you know, being able to find players off backdoor cuts, just being able to take those high percentage shots, understanding that, hey, you know, the team as a whole, we're not shooting the ball particularly well in this tournament, but we're going to find a way. We're going to continue to find ways to attack. And that's exactly what they did in this matchup. And I just don't think that Florida State was prepared for that. Overall, Florida State came out flat. It was definitely, and give credit to NC State. You know, that's where they played extremely well defensively, is because Florida State is such a great team when it comes to running, you know, getting out on the break. They really made Florida State slow down. NC State, I want to say, they really made Florida State slow down and really have to figure out how to play in their half-court offense. And not saying that Florida State can't do it, but they're at their best when they're running in transition. You know, that pace and space is what they're best at. So with that being said, Florida State was just never able to adjust. You know, they only scored 20 points in the first half, which is crazy because they scored over 20 points in the first quarter against Syracuse, and they only scored 43 points for the game. So it was just a combination of good defense by NC State. You know, they definitely made their presence known on that end of the floor. And then you can also say, you know, maybe fatigue, you know, just like, you know, just not enough recovery time as far as the reason why, because like I said, it was less than 24 hours in between two games. So you could play that into effect as well. But just unfortunately, man, you know, the team just wasn't able to come out on top. However, even though we weren't able to get the ACC title or we weren't able to compete in the ACC championship, March Madness is coming around. So we're just going to wait for Selection Sunday. Because there's no doubt we're going to get into the tournament. And I'm just going to let it be known once again, this is not a team that you want to see in the tournament. Depending on who they match up against, whether like one of the top contending teams in the country, be on the lookout because this team is not going to quit. I think that they'll bounce back from this NC State game that they lost pretty badly But once March Madness begins, once the real March Madness begins, then that's where we're going to see this team at their best, man. So unfortunately, they weren't able to get the ACC title, but at the end of the day, there's an opportunity, you know, moving forward into the NCAA tournament. But that's all we got for the women's side, man. Tune in with me and Austin as we talk about the guys' team. My God, Austin, welcome back, bro. How you feeling, man? I know you're just like me, man. You're pretty much on a high after what took place Saturday night, man. But how you been, dog?
Good, man. Anytime you get a win over a rival, well, I guess you can call it a rivalry, as they were saying on the broadcast last night. It's not really a rivalry if one team keeps winning. And with Florida State winning 12 of the last 13 over Miami, it's hard to call it a rivalry, but we take those wins anyway we can get them.
That's a fact. I mean, you can call it a rivalry. I mean, you know, this is two teams that, you know, have a storied history, you know, in the ACC. Yeah. So, you know, I know that we've been dominating as a recent, but, you know, it's still – I guess you can still consider it a rivalry, man. But before we dive into the actual game, you know, first I want to highlight – the seniors on senior day. This was this Saturday was the last game at the Tucker Center. You had guys like Darren Green Jr., Cameron Fletcher, Josh Nickelberry, Jalen Ganey, and a few others who are highlighted on senior day. So my first question to you is, like, what are your thoughts on the seniors, you know, and what their contributions was to the team?
Well, Darren Green Jr. has made sure to let everybody know it was senior day on Saturday. I mean, he tied his career high with 8 made threes, finished with, what was it, 26 points. You know, that's who Darren Green is, and he hasn't been the most consistent this year. I've been especially hard on him since the start of February about his shooting struggles, but you know, he was electric on Saturday with his three point shot making. He even started 2 of 7 and I believe finished 6 of 8 from 3 point range. So impressive game from him. It was good to see him get going again. Jalen Ganey, I wish we could have seen a healthy version of him in his Florida State career. He was so much fun to watch at Brown as the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year twice. Super athletic, could switch everything. And then, you know, there's a lot of great reports about him last year before the 22-23 season on that Canada trip. Comes back, tears his ACL just a couple weeks before the season. And you can just tell he's not the same player. The report on the broadcast, he's going to need another knee surgery this summer. So that sucks. But I really, really wish we could have seen a healthy version of him. Same goes for Cameron Fletcher, who 2 straight years of season-ending injuries. I feel so bad for him. Just so bad. And then Josh Nickelberry, I don't really have much to say about him. Didn't play much this year. And even when he did, he has not shot the ball well at all this year. I believe last I checked, he was at 27% from three. Let me just make sure it hasn't gone down.
I say, you can say that for about a few guys on this team.
Yeah, he's now at 26% from three. So he just hasn't been what Florida State needed. He has given them some veteran experience, which is what is something they needed, especially coming out of last year when there's so many chemistry issues. They just kind of needed a guy that was a veteran that had been around the block to lead some things in the locker room. He's done that, but on the court, he's been very, very disappointing, especially in conference play. But like I said, it was good to see Darren Green Jr. rolling again, and just wish we could have seen healthy versions of Gainey and Fletcher.
That's a fact. I'm glad that you highlighted Gainey, because he was a guy transferring into this program. You know, there was a lot of anticipation as far as what he was going to be able to do for this Florida State team. And I mean, it's like you mentioned, you highlighted him not being able to play last year due to the injury. Then he comes back this year. And one thing that I could say is that you could tell he was getting off to a slow start, just because, you know, you could tell, like, you know, his legs weren't underneath him. You know, you could tell that, you know, he wasn't in. You can just tell he wasn't 100%, but you saw that slow progression. At least I did. I saw that slow progression out of him, you know, as the season went on. You know, obviously he's a great defensive anchor. You know, we mentioned him winning an Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year, so we already knew what he could do from that aspect. But just his evolution as well, you know, being able to protect the basket, being able to switch, you know, on occasion, you know, guarding smaller defenders, and then just being able to hold his own. So even though we didn't see the full package of Jalen Gainey with this team, you know, I'm definitely happy, you know, with the contributions that he was able to provide, you know, in his short time here. Cameron Fletcher is another guy, man, you know, and I mentioned even like last year, you know, how important he was. And even at the start of this season, you know, just how impactful he was off the bench. You know, I feel like the team really needed that, especially, you know, with the team not having Primo Spears at the moment. You know, like, you needed to have a guy who could come in and, you know, and just provide a lot of energy. You know, Cameron Fletcher was able to do that offensively and defensively. So when he went down in that North Carolina game, you know, that was just like, that was sick to me, because this is a guy who fought so hard to get back last year. Now he's back fully healthy and he's making an impact, and now he's not going to be able to play the rest of the year. But even despite, I can't remember how many games he played total as a Seminole, like maybe like 17, 18 games, something like that, combined with the two seasons.
It's more than that, because he also played.
That's right, he did.
I have the stat. I believe it's 46 games. Let me double check real quick. 46 of a possible 94 games as of right now.
Okay, yeah, because I know he missed about 10 games last year, and I think he played. He played 10 games. Last year.
And 10 games last year, 7 games this year. He could get a waiver very easily. The NCAA cutoff for medical redshirt waivers is 10 games, and he hasn't hit that mark two seasons in a row. So he could absolutely get it. I think the bigger question is it in his best interest? Is it in Florida State's best interest? I'm sure that's something we'll discuss in the coming weeks as we get to the close of this season after the ACC tournament and then heading into the offseason.
I mean, that's a fact. I mean, that's definitely going to have to be something that'll be in question, that a conversation can happen, you know, this summer. So I'm actually interested to see, you know, what happens with that. So, I mean, we'll definitely have to keep an eye out on that. And then, you know, we talk about Josh Nickleberry. I can agree with you. He hasn't shot the ball well all season. But one thing that I could say is that, I don't know, it just feels like there's just certain moments in the game where he does come through, you know, whether it's like a three-point shot or a mid-range bucket. You know, there's been many occasions where the opposing team may have momentum, you know, based off going on a quick run or anything. And then for some reason, there's Josh Nickleberry being able to knock down a pull-up mid-range shot or just being able to be a spot-up shooter. So I can agree with you. He hasn't shot the ball extremely well throughout this season. But one thing that I would say is that he still kind of made a small impact. But overall, you know, you can't get mad at the seniors. I mean, we already mentioned Darren Green Jr., you know, and just the production he was able to bring on Saturday against Miami. You know, I want to say that was probably his best game. Actually, it was his best game of the year. And I'm right there with you. You know, I've been very critical of Darren. Obviously, he's the best shooter on the team, but I just feel like there's many moments where he's not as consistent as efficient as he needs to be. But also another thing too is, like, I feel like there's moments where they don't necessarily find a way to get Darren involved, because I look back at the Virginia game when they came to the tuck, and Darren Green didn't even score his first basket until like 3 minutes ago, 3 minutes ago in the second half, which is crazy to me. I didn't even realize that he didn't even score up until that point. And then you just happen to see on a scoreboard, Darren Green has 2 points, and it's like, wow. Like, and they were in that game for the most part. And I look back at that game and be like, dang, like, you know, if Darren Green would have had a strong first half, you know, who knows where that game would have been. So, but I mean, even besides that, you know, Darren Green's just been so crucial to this team from a veteran aspect. And, you know, just his shooting has just been great as a whole as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's been close to 40% his whole career at Florida State from three, and that's something Florida State hasn't had in a while. I think he's been limited by some of his defensive shortcomings. I think he tries, and you've seen that this year with his steals. I believe he's second on the team with steals, but he's a little undersized. He's not as built physically as some of the other guys are on the perimeter, and you saw it in the Pittsburgh game, especially towards the end of that game. They were just switching onto him and going at him pretty much every time down the stretch. And you know, that's something that's hurt this team at time. I also think he's been held back a little bit by his ball handling. He's not the best ball handler.
Yeah.
And he really doesn't get to the basket that often. And now teams are sitting on that. He has that little turnaround shot from the top of the key that he likes to do. And teams are starting to sit on that and trying to force him to the basket because they just don't believe he can. He's done it a little bit in ACC play, but it's definitely not his strengths. It's one of those players, you know what you're getting, and it's something Florida State's desperately needed. I mean, they've needed three-point shooting like nothing else these last few years, and he's been able to provide that for the most part. Like I said, he had a rough February. I think he was shooting 28-29% from three in February, but he was great in January. He's turned around these last couple games, and hopefully he can keep it going in Washington, D.C. next week.
Yeah, even in this Miami game, he didn't start out shooting the best. It was like he got up to a good start, but I think he, like, made like four of his first 10 attempts or something like that. So it wasn't necessarily like the most efficient, but, you know, definitely in that second half, he definitely got going. And it was part of the reason why, you know, Florida State was able to contain their lead. Another thing that I could highlight, I like how Coach Ham brought out all the seniors, you know, towards the end of the game, you know, the guys remain. I see a lot of playing time. I mean, I've not seen the floor at all throughout the season, and, you know, just giving them that opportunity, I thought that was dope as well. So that was overall, just overall great showing as well. But let's dive into the Miami game. You know, got a big win down there in South Beach, you know, early in conference play. I want to say that was like January 6th or 7th. I want to say 17th. Oh, dang, I'm way off. Yeah. But yeah, the 17th, you know, we got a big win down there in Miami. Rode on some momentum. Obviously, one of the bigger stories heading into this matchup was Matthew Cleveland, you know, making his return to the Tuck. And let me just say this. I was there to actually watch it personally. Every time he touched the ball, instant bully. But one thing that I can say is that he had a really strong first half. You know, he was getting to the spots in the mid-range, you know, being able to attack the basket, you know, like, and take those high percentage shots. Wasn't as strong in the second half. He kind of started to come alive towards the end of the game, but I think it was just far too little too late. So briefly talk about, you know, Matthew Cleveland and, you know, and his return going back to the Tuck.
Do I want to say it nicely? Not really. I expected kind of worse, honestly, because I was there for the Grayson Allen game in 2017. And as someone that I grew up with Grayson Allen, not a lot of people know this, went to the same school.
That's what's up.
For a lot of our years growing up, my mom's still great friends with his family. So to look over at that game, sitting on the baseline, and I see his parents sitting front row as the entire arena's going, "F you, Grayson." I'm like, oh God, this is not what I expected. But I kind of expected that reaction last night, and he would get booed, and they would cheer loudly, like when he missed that free throw towards the end of the game, and he missed a couple threes down the stretch. But still, I kind of expected worse. And like you said, he had a good first half. I mean, 10 points in the first half. He was 4-7 from the floor, only one turnover. The second half, he missed a layup. He just seemed a little out of rhythm. That's been a big storyline for Miami as they really struggled the last month, 6 weeks of conference play. They've lost nine straight. They finished ACC at just 6-14 record. That's not good, especially the expectations they had coming into the season. I want to say they're picked third or fourth in ACC preseason. So to finish like they have, a lot of it's injuries with Wuga Poplar, who you could tell was hobbled last night, very clearly playing on one ankle. Norchad Omir's missed some games. Nigel Pack has missed five of the last six games and left early in their last game against Boston College. And Cleveland's missed some games as well, but Cleveland just hasn't been able to fill that role that they got with Jordan Miller last year. And obviously Isaiah Wan was a different position, but still a high production guy that they expected Cleveland to kind of mask up, I guess. And he just hasn't been able to do that. And I think I said in my preview article, since the Florida State game, at end of January, he'd only been averaging about 9 points per game, and that's just not Matthew Cleveland. As much as I don't like his decision to go to South Beach, this is not Matthew Cleveland. I mean, he's been a double-digit scorer his entire career. You know, even as a freshman at Florida State, he might have been a tick under it. But felt like it. You know, it's the kind of player he is. He's always been one of those players that can get to the basket and finish with creativity. Now he's developed more into, he wants to get to the mid range. He wants to take those open threes. I may be wrong, but he may have only taken 2 or 3 layups last night. That just hasn't been the kind of player he's been.
Yeah, he's been more of a mid-range scorer in a way, at least from what I saw in Saturday's game. It seemed like, you know, he's really relying on the mid-range. And, I mean, it worked to his advantage to a degree, but, you know, it just hasn't been like the full offensive package like we've seen, you know, years past. So let me ask you this. Let me go back. So let's go back to last year, at the end of last year, when Matthew Cleveland did decide to enter the transfer portal. What were your initial reaction?
I was not surprised at all, just from some stuff I had heard. There definitely seemed to be some locker room, I don't want to say issues, but the chemistry clearly wasn't there. And there had been reports of some arguments with him and also former Florida State player Nyheim McLeod, and just not a great dynamic in that locker room. I think it was best for all parties to just move on and get a fresh start. I thought the team to beat in the transfer portal was Auburn. That just seemed to be who I thought would be the favorite. It was close to home in Atlanta. And then he goes to Miami, and that was just not what anybody wanted to see. Like, you can't go to Miami, beat them twice down there, because we have to go back to his freshman season as well, throw down the U both times, and then transfer to Miami. You just can't do that. And Florida State fans and some players made sure to let him know about that. And life is a circle. We'll just call it that. Going 0-2 against Florida State this year, I definitely partook in some trolling at his behalf after both games, and I would say it's well-deserved.
I want to say Jameer Watkins had posted something on his IG story, like right after the first meeting. So I remember
He threw down that famous picture of Cleveland throwing down the U last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And, you know, that drew a lot of interest. I was hoping he would do something again.
That's what I was hoping to.
Last night, or on Saturday night, but we unfortunately didn't get that.
Nah, I mean, it's all good, though, but I can understand, like, you know, everybody's point of view. I don't think it was necessarily about him leaving the program. It was about where he went.
Yeah.
And as like we said, you know, Miami is a rival. So the fact that you decided to go there, and I get it, you know, because Miami had a really good season last year. I don't think anybody can ignore that. They were the best team in the ACC last year, so you can't ignore that, but it's just still like one of those situations where it's like you just can't go to that team. But I mean, you mentioned Auburn. Auburn would have actually been like a really good destination for him. You know, Bruce Pearl is a guy that has always, you know, been able to maximize like wing players to them, like to their best potential. So I wouldn't be mad if he had decided Auburn. But Miami, obviously, you know, we see the season that they've had all year. You know, it hasn't really been that impressive to say the least. Obviously, that they lost to us twice. In that first matchup, Matthew Cleveland had a terrible game. I think only like, 2 points in that game or something like that. So
he was 1 of 8 from the floor, a couple of turnovers. Just a really, really bad showing. And he's always been one of those players that kind of disappeared in big moments, but not like that. Like, he would at least still put up some rebounds and some assists, get some steals, and still gets, you know, 6 or 8 points. But to finish with 2 in that game in early January was shocking. I wasn't as surprised to see him bounce back a little bit last night.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because, I mean, you could tell that he was pretty motivated going into that matchup. You could tell, I mean, especially, you know, the first game back of the Tuck, I mean, I'm sure he already knew what was expected out of the crowd and everything. So he came into it really motivated, you know, and his scoring really did was a huge thing for Miami in the first half. But like I said, wasn't really a strong second half. He started to kind of come alive towards the end, but, you know, it just wasn't strong enough. Let me ask you about the game, man, you know, because it was a really big win, especially coming off of 2 road losses. We lost to Georgia Tech last Saturday, then we lost to Pitt this past Tuesday. So what were your biggest takeaways from this game here, especially as we're trying to close the regular season off on a good note?
I have never seen Florida State play like that. They shot 23 threes in the first half, which would have been their 5th highest total for a game this year, much less a half. They kind of settled back in the second half, only took 10 threes that second half, and there were a lot better looks in there and getting that first half. They started to drive more, get back to the way we've been used to Florida State playing this year. Not to say it's worked this year, because, I mean, clearly they're 16-15. Some things haven't worked, but I feel like that's what Florida State has been best at: get into the basket, get into the free throw line. They didn't attempt a free throw until, 3 or 4 minutes into the second half. Then once they broke that seal, I mean, ended up, 15 of 19 from the free throw line. All of those were in the second half. They got to the basket a lot more. And yeah, only 5 of 10 from threes is much better shot distribution than what we had seen in the first half. I thought Jalen Worley played really well in the second half, getting to the basket. He even had words for Cleveland after one of those layup attempts right over Cleveland. I thought Cam Korn came on a little bit down the stretch. Jameer Watkins was good in that second half with 8 points in the second half. But I mean, again, with Worley, had 11 points in the second half alone. I thought he was tremendous. I really think he was. And I know he's one of the more maligned players on this team, and some fans haven't been happy with him. I think he's been much, much better offensively in ACC play. He's shooting 76% from the free throw line since the start of January. I don't think anybody saw that coming the way he started this season. And the way he played last night, I think is starting to give some fans some hope that he can blossom into a quality ACC guard, which is what Florida State needs him to be.
I agree. I think definitely one of the areas in his game, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows, you know, is the perimeter scoring. I mean, we already know that he's really good at, you know, finding ways and finding gaps to be able to get to the basket and finish for higher percentage shots. But that's something that I'm sure a lot of people want to see, is just, you know, his ability to knock down outside shots. Now, I'm not saying that he needs to shoot like at a higher percentage. I'm not saying that he needs to be Steph Curry, for God's sake. But, you know, like just having that ability to space the floor would be definitely crucial. I mean, especially with this team, you know, especially throughout this season, you know, this team wasn't necessarily as efficient from the perimeter. I mean, besides the likes of Darren Green Jr., occasionally Jameer Watkins, and occasionally Premier Spears, who has been starting to kind of show some signs from three-point land. But that's definitely the one area in Jalen Worley's game that, you know, that I would love to see him improve upon. But I definitely agree with you 100%. It was a great showing out of him. Just a great showing from Florida State as a whole. I definitely agree with you. I feel like they settled for way too many threes in the first half. And I was wondering, you know, it was like, I'm not sure what's going on. Like, I saw Jameer take a couple of threes. I saw a few other guys take a couple of threes. And I was like, man, like, I think we need to get back to what we do best as far as moving the ball, you know, like, you know, obviously, you know, finishing in transition and just doing what we do best. But like you say, you know, they were able to clean it up in the second half. Give credit to a lot of guys. I mean, you mentioned Cam Korn. I can mention guys like who I feel like was really impressive, you know, Chandler Jackson and Taylor Bowen, who, in my opinion, Bo Bowen has improved tremendously throughout this year. Like his growth has been tremendous. And, you know, it's just things that you may not see on a stat sheet, but, you know, when you watch the game, like, you can understand how impactful both him and Chandler Jackson have been. And then, you know, Saturday was just an indication of that. So, and the one thing that I'll say is that I feel like there was just moments in the game where I feel like we just could have got away, but for some reason we just let Miami hang around, because there was just moments where I feel like we could have went up like 12, 15 points, but somehow, some way, Miami was just still being able to, you know, stay in the game. And of course, you know, give credit to them, but, you know, that was a big win. You know, last game of the Tuck, you know, this season, you're going up against a rival, coming off of a losing streak. You know, it was really trying to figure out, you know, how they were able to adjust, how they were able to, you know, bounce back, you know, and they were able to do it. So it's a really great, impressive win, you know, to just end the regular season and, you know, as they head into conference play as well.
Yeah, and I feel like Florida State fans kind of discredit what the team's done at home, and I think a lot of it's due to that Lipscomb loss, which is understandably bad, but they've only lost at home to Clemson, Carolina, Duke, and Virginia, who are,
right,
in my opinion, the four best teams in the ACC. So I think you could kind of live with the results they've gotten at home this year. You also have the SMU loss early in the year, and SMU's a good team as well. The team,
Georgia as well.
The team is definitely flawed, but they've come a long way from where they were at the end of the 22-23 season. And if you can convince Jameer Watkins to run it back next year, add some pieces around him, there's absolutely a pathway for this being a good basketball team next year. Florida State fans just have to kind of see that growth. Like I said, Worley's come a long way. Core in these last couple of weeks has been really impressive after kind of having a sloppy start, especially from the free throw line. Chandler Jackson's made a ton of progress. We just mentioned Bull Bowen, who I think is the second most important player for the future of this team. He has such a high ceiling. And as these guys continue to prove, I wouldn't be surprised to see them beat Virginia Tech on Wednesday. I know we'll get to that in a second. But I do think the ceiling of some of these guys are really, really high.
100%. I 100% agree. I've been on record saying that this is a good team, not a great team. And I don't want people, you know, to, like, you know, look at that in the wrong way. But, you know, it's like you say, you know, this team has made great improvements compared to last year. You know, they're healthy. they got a lot of their guys, you know, in the lineup and everything. I know that the team dealt with some injuries early, you know, losing Cameron Fletcher, like we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. even Cam Corn, I missed, you know, a good portion of non-conference play, and then he came back towards the end of non-conference play. So they've definitely had to, you know, make their adjustments and, you know, have to figure things out. But besides that, I mean, you know, you can't really get mad, you know, at what the production was for the team. You know, I mean, of course it was a roller coaster. You know, they had their high moments and they had their low moments as well, but overall, you can't be mad at the production, you know, of what this team was, you know, was able to bring in. I'm right there with you. You know, I would love for Jameer to run it back. I think that I feel like he's found a home in Florida State, and not saying that he didn't, you know, at his other school, but I feel like, you know, now he's been able to maximize his game as a whole, especially being the number one option. You know, he leads the team in three categories, and, you know, he's just been really able to maximize the game as a whole. Like I said, you know, I pay attention to, you know, a lot of NBA draft boards, and I feel like in the past you may have seen Jameer Watkins here and there on a couple draft boards, but now, you know, throughout the season,
I wouldn't be so sure. I talked to a few scouts occasionally. A lot of them are like, "Hey, I like this Jameer Watkins guy. What do you know about him?" I'm like, "Can you please keep it down?" It's one of those that the 2024 draft is so bad that some of these guys like Jameer Watkins are going to potentially have a draftable grade on him just because of his size. He put on 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. He's really shot the ball well in ACC play, especially on catch and shoot threes. He's been really tremendous. He's so strong inside. I mean, he just continues to finish through contact, and he's really, really impressive on the ball defensively. It's everything, you know, NBA teams are looking for these days. And even if he is a little bit older, had a knee injury early in his college career, again, it's one of those draft classes where you're like, there's not a lot of great options down the board, and he could be drafted, you know, high to middle of the second round just based off those traits. And, you know, I have heard that buzz. Hopefully he decides to run it back next year, because, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for the success of next year's team is, do you have Jameer Watkins or not?
That's going to be the biggest question. And I can agree with you. You know, I've been on record saying that Jameer is one of the best on-ball defenders in the ACC, if not even like the entire country. You know, he applies tremendous ball pressure. But even one thing that I've noticed maybe over the last, like, maybe 2 to 3 weeks is he's a really good rim protector as well. You know, he's not afraid, you know, to get under the basket, you know, and be able to block shots and just being able to alter shots as well. So he's shown that growth throughout this year to just being a tremendous all-around player and, of course, you know, a tremendous great defensive player all around as well. So, you know, like, and that's, you know, it's like you say, I mean, that's the biggest question, you know, is Jameer going to be able to run it back next year? And if he does, you know, we're going to see a lot of big improvements with this team, even with what we were able to see this year.
You mentioned him being able to lead in three statistical categories: points, rebounds, and steals. He's now tied for first with assists with Jalen Worley, and he's second in blocks by Mbaba Miller. He just does everything, absolutely everything. And I certainly did not see this coming.
I didn't
before
either.
The season. You know, the more I watched him last year, I knew he'd be a good fit. I did not see him averaging 15, 6, and 3, and very clearly being Florida State's best player at the end of the season.
So let me ask you this about one of the other guys, because, I mean, this is your second episode on, but I want to get your take on Mbaba Miller, because I'm a fan of him. I think that he's a tremendous all-around player, but I feel like there's certain moments, even in Saturday's game against Miami, there was certain moments where he doesn't tend to be as physical as he should be, or he may shy away from it. So what are your overall thoughts on Mbaba?
I love his skill set. I think he has all the tools in the tool shed. He just doesn't know how to use them. There's definitely, in my opinion, there's definitely a clear disconnect with him and the coaching staff on how he wants to be used and how the coaching staff wants to use him. You know, you could tell he wants to be a guard. He grew up playing guard and then had that massive growth spurt and still wants to play that. But at his size, I mean, he is a true 7-footer now. You know, Corey Alexander likes to joke on the broadcast that he's 6'12". He is a true 7-footer now. He just doesn't want to say he is. He's athletic, has quick feet. He can defend 1 through 5. I just think I do agree that sometimes he'd be better used, you know, around the basket. He's a crafty finisher when he wants to be. He just doesn't always want to be that. And sooner or later, he's got to start realizing that, at least in this system. You know, maybe Florida State just isn't for him, and that's okay. You know, there's a guy behind him in Taylor Bowen who may be closer to realizing his potential than Mbaba is currently. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes certain college situations aren't meant for certain players.
I'm with you on that as well, because even I question that throughout the season as well. It's like, you know, is Florida State the right situation for Mbaba Miller? I mean, of course, you know, we all know him. He's a guy who wants to win by committee. So it's not going to be just one guy that's necessarily shining. You know, everybody's going to be able to contribute at a high level. And I feel like with Bobo's skill set, like if he's able to just put everything together and just be able to and just be utilized correctly, like he could be one of the top players, honestly, in my opinion. Just because of his talent alone. And I mean, you know, I know I talk about, you know, his physicality and everything, but he's actually a really good post player, I'll say. You know, I think he's really patient, you know, as far as finding his shots. You know, he's not really in a rush. You know, he can scan the floor whether he wants to make a play or possibly make a pass. So I'm saying Baba has a really high IQ for the game. And his talent is like none other, you know, for a 7-footer. You know, you mentioned all the attributes that he has, you know. I mean, and on top of that, he's a really good ball handler as well. You know, we've seen it on several occasions. So, you know, that I mean, I don't know, it's like I just wish that Baba was utilized more correctly in a way, because I feel like he could be way bigger than what he is now. But I mean, maybe he does need, you know, some extra room for growth. You know, maybe that could be something that we may possibly see next year. Who knows?
We'll see if he's on the roster. You know, like I said, that draft class, maybe he just decides, hey, I'm not having fun in college. Let me see if someone takes a chance on my traits. And there are teams that have, you know, 4 or 5 second round picks. Sure, there's absolutely a world where someone goes, hey, let's just use one of these second round picks on one of these guys, on this Bobo Miller kid. If we have to stash him overseas for a year or two, that's fine. You know, maybe that's the best situation for Bobo. Like I said, sometimes certain college situations aren't meant for certain players. And, you know, I thought he played really well in Spain in the FIBA tournament last summer. I thought he'd found his confidence, found his rhythm. Then he gets to college again, and he's just not playing that same way. So I said, maybe the college game just isn't for him. It's okay.
That's true. I mean, we're definitely going to have to see, you know, what's next for him, if he decides to stay at Florida State or not. But let's go ahead and dive into the conference tournament, because everything is set. Florida State is the 9th seed. We will be playing Virginia Tech on Tuesday. It's going to be an early game, so make sure everybody's to be in tune for that. Split the season series 1-1. We got one at the Tuck. Unfortunately, we lost in their home. What are your biggest keys coming into this first game of conference tournament?
I look back to the game they played in Castle Coliseum at Virginia Tech. I was at that game, one of only two games I was able to go to this year. And Florida State was just absolutely dominated on the glass. Lynn Kidd especially just did so much work on the interior against Florida State. I'm trying to pull up the stats right now. Florida State only had 22 rebounds to Virginia Tech's 33. Virginia Tech had 11 offensive rebounds. That can't happen in this game. They did a great job of limiting Lynn Kidd at home. At the same time, you have three tremendous shooters in Sean Padula, Hunter Couture, and Tyler Nickel, all guys that can shoot the peel off of basketball if you give them open space. Tyler Nickel made them pay in Blacksburg. Hunter Couture and Sean Padula have made them pay in Tallahassee a couple of times. Guarding the three is going to be big. Getting rebounds is going to be big. It's also just one of those events where you have to use your depth. You know, if you want to make a run, Florida State's got to play 10 or 11 guys, and they've all got to play well. It can't be like it was at Pitt, where just one or two guys are playing well and everyone else is stinking it up. You know, you've got to have consistent play throughout the roster if you want to make a run. And I know those guys want to get a third shot at UNC. They felt both of those games are winnable. This is how you get there. You got to beat Virginia Tech again. And then Florida State's absolutely more talented. They just got to get out of their own way, I think.
I agree 100%. I think that this can be a winnable game. I know that the season series was tied at one apiece. Definitely the 3-point shooting is something that we'll definitely have to keep an eye on. In those two games that we played them, Virginia Tech shot 46% combined. So, you know, that's something to definitely keep in mind. And you talk about Hunter Couture and just, you know, Sean Badula and just how they were able to just be snipers from 3-point range. That's something to keep in mind. I mean, you talked about the rebounding as well, which I'll be real. I mean, I feel like this is a team that could just really dominate the glass against anybody. You know, it's like you said, you know, I think that, you know, they just have to find a way to just get out of their own way, you know, and just lock in. So I believe this can be a winnable game. You know, definitely Jameer has to shine. I think that he has to be the guy to set the tone. I feel like this is definitely going to be an area where, you know, where a lot of your upperclassmen are just going to have to lead the way. You know, like Darren Green Jr., you know, can he carry the same momentum for what he took Saturday? Into Tuesday. Yes. I mean, that'll be definitely huge as well, especially with the way that Virginia Tech shot the ball. You know, it'd be great to match that energy. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And like I said, you know, I think that this could be a winnable game. You know, I feel like somehow, some way we'll be able to come out on top and have that next matchup against North Carolina. I mean, it's like you mentioned, you know, whenever we went into their house, we were up 13, 14 points, you know, in the second half. And we actually closed the first half on a really good note. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the Cameron Fletcher injury, that definitely changed everything. But then also North Carolina just went on like a crazy run, like midway through the second half. You know, RJ Davis.
They always do.
Exactly. You know, it was RJ Davis, it was Cormac Ryan. You know, it was an abundance of guys that, you know, that was just going crazy. Armando Bacot. So, and one thing that I'll say about Florida State is that they found a way to just kind of get back discipline and just, you know, be more in control, you know, especially when teams go on those runs. You know, I think Miami's a really good example. You know, whenever we played against them on their home court, whenever we were up big, you know, they went on a run, you know, to crowd themselves back into the game. But, you know, we found a way to, you know, just, you know, be ourselves again and just find a way to close out the game. So I think from the aspect of just, you know, staying disciplined in a way, I feel like Florida State has improved upon that. So I think Virginia Tech is, like I said, I think it's a winnable game. You know, as long as we can slow down, you know, the 3-point shooting and then crash the glass, I think that we'll be on our way to the next round.
Absolutely. You know, when after Florida State's win over Miami, it came down to they're either going to play Virginia Tech or they're going to play Wake Forest. And I was sitting there going, you know, I know Wake Forest has struggled recently, but I'd much rather play Virginia Tech. Just they don't have the talent. I think Steve Forbes is a better coach. I just think for Virginia Tech, obviously, Virginia Tech can shoot the peel off the basketball, but Florida State can slow that down. Big if, you know, easier said than done. But you can limit Virginia Tech as a whole by just slowing down that one thing. Wake Forest just has so many different moving parts that you have to slow down in order to beat them. I just think this is a better matchup for Florida State. Is it going to be an annoying game? Absolutely. Jameer Watkins has to stay out of foul trouble because he didn't do that at Blacksburg. He picked up those two quick fouls to start the second half. And Coach Hamilton talked about it after the game. You know, he can't do that. He has to be better than that. And he does. And he knows he has to be better than that. And I think he's going to come out in this game with something to prove. And hopefully he does, because I really want to see this team get a third crack at Carolina.
Who do you think could be the more important role player on this team? I mean, obviously, besides, you know, the main guys, Darren Green Jr. and Jameer Watkins, who do you think, you know, maybe possibly off the bench that can make a big impact? Could it be Taylor Bourbon? Could it be Primo? You know, out of those guys do you think that could make a huge role in this game?
Primo Spears needs a bounce back. He had a weird close to that game at Virginia Tech where he fouled Lynn Kidd with a minute and a half left, which he intentionally fouled out, minute and a half left on an 89% free throw shooter. That was just a strange situation where one of those are sitting in the arena going, I don't know if that's what the coaching staff wanted. He needs a big bounce back in this game. At the same time, I think Chandler Jackson is going to be big in this game. He's a strong physical player and he's going to be matched up on Couture and Padula, and he's going to have to, you know, limit those guys as best as he can. I think he's arguably the best guy on the perimeter to do that outside of Jameer Watkins and Jalen Worley. And if he's going to be able to play 18 to 20 minutes this game, a lot of that's going to be dependent on his defense and his ability to slow down those guys.
I agree. I 100% agree. And if we do get out of this first round matchup, which me and you definitely expect to happen, what do you think are some keys against North Carolina in that next matchup? Because I would love to see Jameer RJ Davis a lot more personally. I don't know if he'll guard him like the entire game, but definitely, you know, a lot of crucial moments where he should be guarding him.
Yeah, him and Worley have to be the two players on RJ Davis at all times. I mean, we've seen Davis have some incredible performances this season. To me, he's very clearly ACC Player of the Year. Like, it's not even a close second. He's very easily the best player in the conference this year.
Easily.
With Carolina, it really comes down to how much can you limit, you know, the Cormac Ryans and the Elliott Cadeaux. You know, if RJ Davis is going to explode like he's going to explode, you really have to limit everybody else. I'm not that high on Armando Bacot personally. I think he gets away with a lot underneath with elbows and shoulders and things like that. I think it's a little bit easier to limit his impact. But with him, it comes on the glass, you know, really getting after on the defensive glass, making sure he doesn't get those putback opportunities. And then with Harrison Ingram, you just can't leave him open. You know, I think he's a much improved shooter from where he was at Stanford, but I still don't think he's an elite shooter. You know, he's not going to be one that wants to shoot over contests unless he's in that rhythm. You know, that's what happened down the stretch in that first game in Chapel Hill. Is he was getting left wide open and was able to start knocking those down, got in a rhythm, and then the floodgates just open. With Carolina, you have to be ready for those runs because they're coming. It's like the Indiana State Drake game that I was just watching a couple of hours ago. You know, Drake was ready for the Indiana State run, and Indiana State still almost came back and won. You've got to be able to overcome that run. You've got to be able to be prepared for it. You can't let a 6-0 run turn into a 12-0 run and then an 18-0 run like we've seen I want to say the last 3 years in Chapel Hill. It just can't happen. You know, UNC is too talented. It just can't happen.
I agree. Definitely slow down the shooting. You know, definitely figure out how to respond whenever North Carolina goes on those runs, because they definitely are coming, especially if they get off to a slow start in the second half. Please be on the lookout, you know, because there could be a moment where midway through the game, you know, where they just start catching fire and then they don't look back. So those are definitely the keys. But, you know, ACC tournament overall should be really fun to watch. I know that I've heard, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, the ACC hasn't been as strong as it has been, you know, years past, but anything can happen, honestly. You know, and obviously, you know, with Florida State, you know, in its first matchup against Virginia Tech, I think it'll show everything that, you know, that we need to know moving forward.
Yeah, I'm hoping this doesn't turn into, was it Syracuse we played 2 years ago, where, you know, Florida State was finally getting healthy, like Anthony Polite had come back from injury.
Yeah.
And someone else had just come back from injury, and you're like, oh, you know, and they killed NC State in the last game. Like, oh, they might be finding some rhythm heading into the ACC tournament, and then they get smoked by Syracuse in, I believe, the same game, the 8-9 game on a Wednesday.
Got to
come out with some energy, got to come out with some urgency. Can't be one of those games where you fall behind 10-2 because, you know, Virginia Tech's got the shooters to keep that lead at a distance.
That's a fact, man. But yeah, people, make sure to tune in. That's going to be an early game. I want to say it's at noon Eastern on Tuesday. Yeah. So make sure to be in tune for that one, man. And like I said, you know, this should be a winnable game. And let's see if we possibly move on to the next round. But Austin, appreciate you for coming on once again, man. Definitely let the people know where to find you and where to find a lot of your content.
Yes, sir. So you can find me on X or Twitter at EasyVZNG, or you just search my name, Austin VZ. I'm probably the only VZ on the app. You find me at si.com/FSU. I do pretty much all of our basketball content there. You can find me on the Hear the Spirit podcast, presented by Sports Illustrated. We won't be live this week because Logan's out of town, but otherwise we're live every Wednesday night.
Yeah, sure. Shout out to Fear the Spirit, by the way, man. Make sure to be in tune for everything Austin's got going on. Follow myself on X or Twitter at Nick Andre ATR, that you'll see all my content regarding Florida State. And then, of course, you know, just other things regarding basketball. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe on any platform that you listen to, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. Make sure to rate and review as well. Once again, appreciate you guys for listening, and I hope that you guys have a good one.